I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and NPR's own political editor Ken Rudin. I'm sure I'll jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey,
Jimmy.
Hey,
happy.
Okay, man. Doing good.
Oh, man. Well, embattled New York Governor David Paterson says he's up for the challenge and he is seeking to keep his seat in Albany. Now, this despite the White House allegedly urging the governor to drop out of the 2010 election. You know, and it's not for nothing, right? Because people seem to think that AG Mario Cuomo, you know, he might, because he's polling a little better. He's polling significantly
Cuomo.
Better. And,
I think
you.
Mario's had his term.
Right. Thank you.
Three,
for that.
As I recall.
Well, at any rate, he's polling a little better, significantly better than Paterson.
Jimmy,
Ken, what do you
Jimmy
think?
you're polling better than David
Paterson. Which is saying something.
Word.
So, Jimmy, what are you saying? You're saying should he or shouldn't he? I don't know. Ken, what do you think?
Right.
I mean, that's not really our job to tell the man what to do. But, Ken, what do you think?
No, I listened to the interview with Governor Paterson, and it was an excellent interview. And basically, he seemed to be very aware of his numbers. He cited that there are other 10, 11 other governors who have polling ratings under 35%. But I thought what was most interesting, one, he said, look, it's up to the voters of New York. And it's true. It's not up to President Obama. Of course, as head of the party and head of the country, he should have the Democratic Party's interest in mind. But he did make a very good point. A year ago, now we're talking about a year from now is when David Paterson runs. A year ago, Governor John Corzine of New Jersey had terrible polling ratings. It was awful. There was no interest of Barack Obama coming in like in January or February of this year saying Corzine shouldn't run in 2009. So he said, look, you know, it's interesting how the White House will pick and choose which where to get involved.
Right. Right.
Well, that's executive privilege. I mean, you know,
I'm trying to envision somebody criticizing LBJ for being too heavy-handed. Excuse me. I just think that's kind of funny. But anyway, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, but you don't want to okay. – it depends on where you set your standards. This is Ruben. You don't want to be emulating LBJ if at all possible. And certainly I think this was really distasteful for a lot of folks to have the nation's first black president telling through the back channels the New York's first black governor that he ought not run when he didn't convey that message as was mentioned, but to Corzine in New Jersey, whose numbers aren't much better than they were even
but
back
Corzine
then.
So, has already won his primary, as Greg Meeks, who's also African-American and a very close friend of David Paterson, said, and who is believed to be one of the intermediaries, said on this program. But flip it around and say, you know, should he be supporting him because he's African-American?
No, I think the White House has been a little more, you know, I won't say up front. I mean, they haven't denied the story. I think that listening to your interview, you did a good job at your end, but obviously it was comical to watch David Paterson tell us that what we know to be true isn't really true and that this pressure wasn't ongoing. He should have told his wife that before she came forward with her remarks. Charlie Rangel in New York has come forward with remarks saying the president should stay out of it.
That's true.
So clearly the cat is out of the proverbial bag that the White House did, in fact, try to strong-arm David Paterson. I say it's wrong. I say he shouldn't back off, and he should run again, and how dare the White House?
But he won't run. He won't run.
Yeah. But wait a minute. Why
you're
should
saying he won't? Ken Rudin's making a prediction here. We got to hear.
There's no way he runs.
Oh, go ahead.
And the reason he won't run is because not because of pressure from the White House, but the New York Democratic Party will look at the numbers come 2010. The reason he's staying in the race right now is because there are very sensitive budget issues, and if he's a lame duck governor, he will not have any sway. So he wants to stay as a governor running for re-election, and push the budget issues out of the way, and then he'll say, well, you know, my numbers aren't so good.
Well, and piggyback.
Well, he said barring a natural disaster, he was going to run. What's
well,
up with that?
What is that?
That's called
saying I need to spend more time with my family.
That's called poll numbers.
Well, and this is Arsalan, and piggybacking off something that Ken Rudin has said, you know, we do have to come to terms with the fact that, politically speaking, you know, Governor David Paterson does suffer from a bit of, you know, Roland Burr syndrome or lame duckitis. I mean, especially when the head of your party, the president of the United States, you know, has asked you not to run. You know, first of all,
I just say one thing about Roland Burr? The criticism, I think it's funny, people are criticizing Obama now for getting involved. But when it came to Roland Burr, they criticized him for not getting involved enough.
Well, I think
so. Which is it?
In this case, first, I mean, the first thing that I'd say is for any blind black man from Harlem to ascend to the governorship of New York is an amazing political feat. I mean, he picked up the ball when Eliot Spitzer fumbled, and now the Stanford marching band is running towards him, and he needs to lateral the ball to his own team if he wants to see his own team win.
Just to tie a bow on that, and I know you guys have other things you want to talk about. This isn't just some guy. I mean, this is the son of one of the most influential power players in New York politics. So it's not like he just fell off the turnip truck and got that job.
Right, no. That's why I said for him to ascend to that level is quite amazing.
It's true.
If only he could win friends and influence people. Word to Dale Carnegie. So anyway, keeping it in motion, in other news this week, sadly, the internet went nuts over cell phone video of the fatal beating of 16-year-old Darian Albert in Chicago. Now everyone is talking about it, including the White House, right, Michelle?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. Ruben wrote a column about this, whether the White House is talking enough about this. I mean, there's White House press secretary Robert Gibbs speaking about this Wednesday. I'll play that for you if you'd like to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Drop it. Here it is.
The reports of and the video that we have seen on television is among the most shocking that you can ever see. The killing of an honor student by others who's beaten to death is chilling, chilling video. And this is something that the administration has been working on. This is not just a Chicago-specific problem, obviously. Youth crime and gang violence are something that this administration takes seriously, and we'll have more on that soon.
I just want to clarify for people who aren't aware of all of the facts. Last Thursday, this young man was walking home from school. He had nothing to do with the altercation. There was apparently a fistfight that was related to a shot being fired outside the school. Earlier in the day, he was just walking home and was set upon, and a passerby captured this on cell phone video, and then it was later played on the local news. I will say that for those who had qualms about this being seen, I talked to folks who know the family, and they supported the release of the video because they felt that this was the only way to figure out who was actually involved. So with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. Ruben, you kind of went in on the president for not saying enough. Go ahead, man.
Well, listen, first of all, the president hasn't said anything about this. The comment from Gibbs was in response to a question from a reporter. If the reporter doesn't ask the question, Gibbs doesn't even give you that very weak comment you just heard. Beyond that, now the president is sending Eric Holder and Arne Duncan to Chicago. But what a lot of folks on the ground are saying, I gather, from a couple different sources, African-American talk radio in and out of Chicago, African-American blogs, which I spent a good amount of time reading in preparation for my column for CNN, clearly, there's a lot of folks in Chicago, black folks, who are incensed at Obama, not just because he hasn't said anything about this, but because he went to Copenhagen, in a classical example of bad timing, to argue for the Olympics to be brought back to Chicago. And a lot of folks were saying, listen, if you bring the Olympics to Chicago, there's no doubt you're going to have lots of police and National Guard protecting the folks here, the tourists, the international tourists. How about spending some money to protect the folks here now, before the Olympics get here? And I think it's a very fair point. And the most cutting thing I heard, and I got to hand it to African-Americans, are a lot like Latinos in that regard. When they have a question, when they have a concern, they will tell you. They don't care, black president or no black president, they will go right there. And clearly one person said, do you suppose the president now is going to invite Darian Albert's mother to the White House for a beer? That just hurt. That was an attempt by this African-American blogger to put out the notion that the president deals with these issues in very superficial ways.
You know what? That's a great line. And my family, of course, goes out. I mean, my heartfelt condolences go out to the family of Darian Albert. But at the end of the day, you know, Obama can't parent your kids, man. I'm sorry. I mean, I loved your piece for CNN. But, you know, Obama can't come to Chicago and parent your kids. He can't come to Cleveland and parent my kids. You know, I don't think it's fair to ask the president. Of course, he should say something. But what do you want him to say exactly? What do you want him to do exactly?
Well, listen, he gave a wonderful speech in Philadelphia, as we all know, we always go back to on race. I mean, he has very deep thoughts about race, and I think it was a therapeutic speech. He probably also has very deep thoughts about urban violence and the fact that this is a plague on the black community and some degrees on the Latino community as well. And clearly that's what folks in his base want him to say and want him to address. And this notion somehow that, you know what else really drives people crazy? They hate Richard Daley. Mm. Okay, they apparently they hate Richard Daley, this Democratic governor, this Democratic mayor from Chicago, and the fact that Daley is out there with an Olympics jacket trying to push the Olympics in Chicago when he can't tell his cops to protect those neighborhoods has black folks incensed.
Can we hear from Arsalan, who's from Chicago?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody.
I hear you, Ruben. I hear. And yeah, what I appreciate is the feelings do better, because one of the things that bothers me is it's like so mundane. It's like, oh wow, another right. kid in Chicago got killed. I hate that.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Well,
it
can never be that.
And for me, growing up in Chicago, you know, sadly, this is something that we heard every single year about Chicago public school kids who were being murdered every single year. There are currently over 600 Chicago public schools in the school district. Another thing that a lot of people don't know is the entrenchment and the historical significance of the gang life in Chicago. The Gangster Disciples from the south side of Chicago represent almost 60,000 people in Chicago. The Latin Kings on the west side have a membership upwards of 110,000 people in Chicago. And they're both the largest African-American and Hispanic street gangs in the country, and they both originate in Chicago as well. And so we've always had a gang pandemic within Chicago. And now it's sort of, you know, obviously morphed into like a millennial neighborhood version where kids aren't really necessarily either GDs or Latin Kings, but now they have their own neighborhood crews. And how are we as, you know, Chicagoans going to protect our kids from being able to walk from the front steps of their school to the two right. blocks that they need to get home safely? And one of the suggestions that I had is if there are 600 public schools in Chicago, the Chicago Police Department can take one uniformed officer and just put them outside every one of the 600 schools after school for 2 hours. I think at least, I mean, because if you looked at the Darian Albert video, that happened right outside of the school grounds. And I think that at least as a deterrent, I know it's not going to be, you know, the solve all, but, you know, this is just one thing that we can do within the community. I think, as you know, you talk about Mayor Daley, I think that's what he needs to do.
Well, the only thing
that
I would say before,
like
it just bothers
that
me. Though,
really,
you know, we're having all this
solution.
Conversation about swine flu, and there's this massive public health effort to combat, mm-hmm. you know, swine right. flu. And I guess I just don't understand why it is that you've got this virus of violence, which is killing these
right.
kids, some of whom are
right.
innocent bystanders. And by definition, you don't pick your parents. So if you're born into a dysfunctional environment, and then I guess I just don't understand why there isn't this massive concern about that. Forgive me. I don't mean to get on my soapbox,
well,
but it just makes me
crazy. Wait,
hold on.
Why,
I just have to jump in to say.
You know why.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop, and we're joined by Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. You know, I think the solution might be, to your point, A-Train. I think that's kind of an expensive solution. What I'm looking for, where are the rec centers? You know what I mean? Why do we need a cop outside every school? Why can't we have some after-school programs put in place? To me, I want to know what choices these kids had. You know, not to say the violence is the only choice, but, you know, I think our kids sometimes need more choices. That's what I think. And mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, we got to parent your kids, too.
Okay.
That's
right
a bet.
On. Right.
So, on a much different topic, the Late Show talk show host David Letterman dropped a bombshell last night. He admitted to having sexual relations with women on his staff. Oi, Michelle, we got tape on that, right?
Well, a tape of what? I mean, it depends on what. Excuse me.
Wait a second.
This is not television.
That's not the Late Show that we're used to seeing. But well, if okay,
the family
right.
show.
Family. Here's what David Letterman told his audience about this, and this is just a little bit of what he said. There's a long prelude to this, which may or may not be relevant, about how he kind of finally got to the point, but here's what he said.
What was it? What was all the creepy stuff that he was going to put into the screenplay and the movie? And the creepy stuff was that I have had sex with women who work for me on this show. Now, my response to that is, yes, I have. I have had sex with women who work on this show.
So anyway, my apologies to the parents who don't think that that was appropriate for their kids to hear. I apologize. I should have warned you. But the gist of it is that Letterman says that he was the target of an extortion attempt. The person wanted $2 million, was going to write a screenplay about this, and then he went to the authorities, and a person has been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently we'll hear more on this later today.
Yeah,
Ken,
I mean,
I don't know if that's a movie I want to see. I don't know if I want to see a movie about the sexual exploits of David Letterman.
Yeah, so I mean, you won't be now.
Right.
Right. Well, that was a bad pitch anyway. Go ahead, A-Train.
Ken and I were talking beforehand. The absurdity or the Woody Allen-esque, absurdity of this whole thing was that, David Letterman found the screenplay in the backseat of his car, in the parking lot. And so it's just, it's gotten to the point now where, I mean, when he said that he had sex with women who worked on his show, people started clapping.
They applauded.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get,
it's like. It's like when Roman Polanski, and you remember his last movie, Close Encounters with the Third Grade? I mean, I thought that was pretty amazing. But the fact is, so many people defend him. Well, he suffered enough. He suffered enough.
He raped a 13-year-old.
He raped a 13-year-old girl.
Let's clarify. Right. He raped a 13-year-old. He raped her. This was not a consensual act.
He suffered enough.
He raped her.
Absolutely.
But we're not talking about rape here, evidently. I mean, there's no allegation of rape in the David Letterman case. But it is interesting that,
sexual
this is
harassment.
A week after this.
Right.
Well, he has the president on the show.
Right.
Yeah, and what about all these women who didn't sleep with him? I mean, did they get good assignments? Did they, or the men who were not involved in this? What's up with that?
This answers the proverbial question between David Letterman and Jay Leno. Jay Leno wins.
Well,
is that the truth?
Well, I mean, but it is interesting after this huge high he had last week. He has the president on his show. He had huge ratings for that. He just got into this kerfuffle, which we talked about with Sarah Palin over his jokes. I mean, it kind of puts the whole thing in a different light, I think. And I appreciate Ken, you pointing out how inappropriate this whole Roman Polanski thing is. It just amazes me.
But it just seems like, just as Arsalan was saying, that the fact that the audience gives him a standing ovation, I slept with members of my staff, yay, way to go, Dave. It's just unbelievable.
Well, what do we think that means? I don't know, Ruben. What do you think?
The Polanski and the Letterman applause lines? I mean,
yeah, the people defending him.
I think the reaction's horrible. I think, he gets through it however he needs to get through that monologue. It's a difficult thing for him to say. And so I'm sort of relieved for Dave when I hear them clapping because it takes some of the tension out of the room, right? Okay, I get that. But at the same time, you are talking about something that not that long ago, when it was, Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill and just the idea of a worker and a worker and an employer. I mean, as Michelle just said, there's a whole backstory here as to women who didn't sleep with him and what kind of, this whole thing is a serious thing. It's not really something to be laughed at. But it's a New York audience. It's just not appropriate.
It just shows how much more there is to say about the way we relate to each other. Anyway, thanks everybody. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, and he joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete, that's the last person we heard from, is a syndicated columnist. He writes for the San Diego Union Tribune and CNN.com, and he joined us from San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. They were both here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you all so much, gentlemen.
Peace.
The question is, who lasts longer, David Paterson or Floyd Paterson?
Yeah. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.